Welcome back to Wooden Sticks here on the Talk North Podcast Network. My name is Kevin Gord. Really appreciate you tuning in today. As the show starts to grow, this is a podcast dedicated to former players, coaches, and managers in the great game of hockey. And as I mentioned maybe a couple shows ago, I'm in my mid to upper 50s. And so I have great, vast memories of the 70s and 80s, and specifically the boys' state high school hockey tournament. Special place in my heart that's been documented many times here on the show. And back in the late 70s, Grand Rapids was a rising power up on the range. And they had a goaltender by the name of Jimmy Jetland. They called him the Jet. They were the Halloween machine. And a game I'll never forget, which we'll get to on the show today with Jimmy, is a 1978 state quarterfinal between Hill Murray and Grand Rapids. And the two goaltenders put on a clinic. Jetland in one end, Jeff Poeschel in the other end, wearing number 21 for Hill Murray. He would go on, of course, to play at Northern Michigan, be my goalie coach with Terry Skrypek as the head coach at St. Thomas. And then now he's a big-time coach at Matamidi, multiple state championships, just got through another great season with the Zephyrs. But this game was, you know, for me as a kid, and at the time I'm 11 years old, watching these two teams go back and forth, it's just this amazing goaltender's duel. And it was a highlight I could never forget. Later in life, when I was the women's coach at St. Thomas, I would be lucky enough to have the opportunity to circle back with Jim Jetland and end up being a friend. And his daughter, Katie, had a chance to recruit her. She was a star at Benilde St. Margaret's, and she would end up being an All-American for us at St. Thomas, just like her dad, an outstanding human being, and just a beloved player in our program. So today's a special show. You know, and some of these episodes, I'll be connecting with folks I just know through hockey, and in others, it'll be good friends. And Jim Jetland is absolutely a good friend. What you need to know about Jim Jetland is he's real down-to-earth and real modest. Doesn't love talking about himself. Happy to talk about his daughter and maybe the team around him. He's always been that guy, just the ultimate gentleman. And really, he won't say it today, so I'm going to say it right now. One of the greatest goalies to ever play high school hockey in Minnesota. And I don't say that without, you know, meaning it for one, and then having lived through it and seen some of the just iconic goaltenders that came through the St. Paul Civic Center with the clear boards and the one tournament format. It was a different world. And Jimmy and Grand Rapids kind of took that tournament by storm. Ended up losing one of those state tournament runs in the final game against Willard Eichola and Edina East. It was a tournament that included Neil Broughton and Butsy Erickson and Aaron Broughton. Doug Woog had South St. Paul in the tournament. It was just remarkable. And these are the memories that stay with you. He would go on to play for Herb Brooks, who recruited him at the University of Minnesota, was teammates with all those guys from the Gophers that went over and played in the Olympics and eventually in that Miracle on Ice win over the Russians. So talk about a cool connection to the game. Talk about some wonderful stories. Today on Wooden Sticks, it's going to be that type of day. Going back in time with Jimmy Jetland from the Halloween Machine in Grand Rapids. Really excited about that. And before we get to Jim, just a quick reminder that we'd love to elevate your business. And we hope that either you or someone you know wants to be a sponsor here on Wooden Sticks. If you want to be a part of it, Karen Cleary can hook that up. K Cleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at talknorth.com. Help us help you, as they say in the business, and be a part of Wooden Sticks. And when we come back after this quick break, Jimmy Jetland from Grand Rapids. All right, welcome back to Wooden Sticks. Kevin Gorg with you, and I am very excited, as I mentioned in our introductions earlier, for our next guest. Longtime friend, one of my real heroes when I was a younger goalie growing up in Burnsville in the 70s and 80s. Jimmy Jetland, the mayor of Excelsior, in my world anyway, and a great goaltender from the days back at Grand Rapids. Jimmy, how are you?
Kevin, I'm fabulous, and it's excellent that we're talking right now after coming off this state high school hockey tournament. Just, I think you're and my a lot of our discussions over the years have been around this turn. We're connected because of that. So the timing is perfect.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny, Jimmy, you know, a lot has changed. You know, when we played, it was a one class format. It was a completely different world. We didn't have cable TV or internet. So a lot has changed in the way this tournament is available. I was in Denver on Friday watching the Class A semifinals on my laptop. It was unbelievable. But the magic of the weekend, Jimmy, even going back to when we were kids and looking at where we are now in 2024, it's still there. Like, this tournament still has the juice.
The magic is definitely still there. My family have had season tickets to this tournament for 50 years, and it's one of my greatest annual excursions is to go down to this tournament and see all the people and the energy that's there from not only all the schools that are participating, but the people that have just been going forever. I mean, you talk to people, and I've been going for 40 years and 50 years, and it's just – the tradition is unlike any other, and I know that's a phrase used too much with the Masters, but it really is a special experience. And I'll tell you, the one thing that has changed, Kevin, is the level of play is unbelievable. These high school kids are so talented.
The speed of the game, the strength, and you know the way the kids shoot the puck, play the game, and then, of course, because of the position you and I both played, goalie, you watch those kids, and I was a part of the broadcast for the Class A championship game. And both these goalies are captains. They're spectacular athletes. They play the game at a much higher level. And the game was great when we played in the 70s and 80s. We had some unbelievable players. It's just evolved to a place, like you mentioned, Jim, where I sometimes marvel at the speed.
There's no question about it. I've had people over the years that have said, "Hey, you know, do you ever coach goalies, Kevin? The position has changed so much. I wouldn't know how to coach goalies right now." I mean, it's a style that is much, I think, better for goaltenders to play, but it's just so different from what you and I, you know, certainly from how I played. You were maybe 7 or 8 years past me, but it's, you know, they stay back in the net. The equipment is bigger. They're more skilled, and they just take that five hole away with the equipment. It's I would not know how to coach goaltenders right now.
Well, when you and I played, you were taught, especially when the puck was on the side, you know, the goal line extended, that you stood up against that post. And now that's just the opposite. To your point, the equipment, the way these kids play, and let's be honest, they're bigger and taller kids, but they play on their knees. They play the block and slide style. And I've had to evolve, and I don't do a lot of coaching of goaltenders. I do basics once in a while. I've got some friends that are coaches in town. But I'm with you. I mean, the level that, you know, I watch, you know, Freddie Shabbat with the Minnesota Wild coaching, you know, both Gustavsson and Marc-Andre Fleury in the Wild net, they do drills I've never seen. Like, it's a completely different position. And, you know, I again, sometimes I get a little jealous because the gear is bigger and it's lighter. The sticks are completely different. That's where this whole podcast originated. I want to go back to when you started. I think of Grand Rapids, Jimmy, as a hockey mecca still. And it's one of the few arenas that has season tickets for their high school hockey games. How did you come to the game as a little kid? How did you come to hockey?
Yeah. So I had an older brother, a brother that was 15 years older than I was, that was a goaltender. And when I was a pretty young age, he got me started playing goaltender. And he even signed me up. You'll remember this, Bemidji Hockey Camp.
Yep.
He signed me up to go to Bemidji Hockey Camp for 2 weeks in the summer. You had to be 10 years old, and I was 9. He lied about my age, and he signed me up for this camp. And I think for the whole 2 weeks, I was homesick and wanted to be home. But I think it was my older brother's influence that got me to play goaltender and got me into the sport. And you're right about Grand Rapids hockey. It is. Such a big tradition there. And I can just tell you that half the town was probably down here this weekend. And it was a, you know, something that they look forward to every year. And, you know, they're maybe not as dominant annually as they were before, but it is a big tradition and one that I don't know that will ever change in Grand Rapids or any of these small communities, whether it be War Road or whether it be Moorhead or whether it be Roseau it engulfs the entire community state hockey tournament time.
And if I recall, you played more than one sport at Grand Rapids.
I did. I played I was actually a better baseball player than I was a hockey player. And I just think that was something that was more common back then as well. I mean, I think you certainly saw, two and three sport athletes, where now I think these players are as good as they are because they're as specialized as they are. And it really has elevated their game. They're just bigger, faster, stronger. And I think the specialization helps them, you know, elevate their game well past whatever we would have done at that same level.
One of the things I really appreciate about the game that we played and when we played in our era was there was no term called open enrollment. So the kids that you grew up with playing squirt hockey, peewees, that was your team essentially when you got to the high school. Tell me about youth hockey in Grand Rapids, and when did you start to realize that, number one, you were pretty good in net, but you also had a team around you that had, maybe had the potential to be pretty darn good, and maybe at some point when you were in high school, the dream of going to the state tournament might be a reality.
Yeah, so I was in youth hockey in the early 70s, mid-70s, and that's really when Grand Rapids hockey kind of turned the corner and started to have an impact on the range. Prior to that, you know, it was International Falls, and it was Hibbing, and it was Eveleth, but Grand Rapids got an indoor rink, I would say, in the mid-60s, and they started to turn the corner, and you know, you play in youth hockey, you go to tournaments all around the state, and you start to realize you're pretty good. You got some success, and your teams have some success, and you win some games, and you go to some state tournaments and win that. And pretty soon you realize you're surrounded by a lot of pretty good hockey players. And I was, you know, as a goaltender, you're only going to be as successful as the team around you. And I was blessed with incredible talent in front of me. And I think it certainly made me a better goaltender, but it also gave me the kind of confidence that you need to have at that position. So I would say in the early 70s, the game of hockey started to evolve at Grand Rapids, and you became every year to think, okay, we've got a chance to do something with whatever team you were playing on.
And you were a part of a run at Grand Rapids that was just spectacular. We have that in common. You know, I was lucky enough to be at Burnsville in the mid 80s. When the population was up and we had a ton of kids playing hockey and we knew we were going to be good. But you guys had this incredible run mid to late 70s where you guys were a power in high school hockey. What I want to know, Jimmy, is who came up with the term Halloween machine for Grand Rapids?
Oh, Gorgie, that's a good question. I don't have any idea. For all I know, it was somebody like you. You'd be a guy that would coin a phrase like that. I don't know. Obviously, it was the orange and black uniforms. I don't know. It was probably well before I even realized it was out there, but it to this day, I still hear it. I get texts all the time. People say, go Halloween machine. And it's even though the name of the school has changed, the Halloween machine has not changed.
So. Who was the goaltender as a kid that you looked up to? Who was your hero, whether it was an NHL goalie, maybe it was a college or high school goalie?
Yeah. It's funny. On a high school level, there were two names that stick out to me. One was Doug Long.
Yes.
He would have played maybe in the mid to late 60s, and he had a game where he had a bunch of saves. And, you know, as a goaltender, you always look up to those goaltenders that played before you. Another high school goaltender that I remember was from International Falls. I think it was Frank Wasilowicz in kind of the Bronco heydays.
Yep.
From an NHL standpoint, I'll give you one name that won't surprise you and one name that will. The one that won't is Tony Esposito.
Me too.
He kind of played a style that, you know, you were left-handed. He was left-handed. I was not, but he kind of played a style that I liked, and he was kind of flashy and had a great glove hand, and style was Rogi Vachon.
Yes.
Played for the LA Kings.
Cool mask.
Yeah, had a cool mask. So those would be four goaltenders that I can remember as a young kid that had some influence on me.
I'm going to take you back to 1978, and I've had a lot of quality time with you, and we'll get later in the podcast here to our time when I was lucky enough to coach your daughter, Katie, who ended up being an All-American goalie for me at St. Thomas, and really just serendipitous the way this whole relationship came together. But 1978, my big tradition as a kid was my dad would take me down for the Thursday of the state tournament if I was behaving and not in any trouble at school, full day with my dad. Go to the day games, have some dinner at Gallivan's in St. Paul, come back for the night session. And the game that probably changed my life was a game between your Grand Rapids team and the Hail Mary Pioneers. And in one net was Jimmy Jetland. In the other net was my later goaltending coach at St. Thomas, Jeff Pogel, who now is the coach at Matamidi. And it was a classic goaltender's duel. And every time I went to the game, all I wanted to do was watch the goalies. I was obsessed as a kid with the goalies. And this ended up being a 1-0 game where two of the state's very best goalies went toe-to-toe. You end up winning that game in 1-0 fashion. How much do you remember that game?
You know, you mentioned this story. It's absolutely fascinating. I'm sitting literally last Thursday, Kevin, I'm sitting over at McGovern's before the Thursday night games. I'm sitting next to a guy and he says, "Oh, are you cheering for Grand Rapids?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." He goes, "I remember 1978. Yes. He said, "Your Grand Rapids team beat our team 1-0 in the first round of the tournament." He said, "Do you remember that game?" And I said, "Yeah, I kind of do." And I never really got into why I remembered it.
You're too modest. I know. I can just see the conversation.
It was really kind of funny. I lit up and said, "Yeah, I do remember that game." It was a back and forth game. You know, in those days, as you remember, there were only 15-minute periods, 45-minute games. And you know, I didn't get as many shots off in those days, but I do remember it was a little back and forth. We played Hail Mary, I think, in 2 or 3 years in the tournament when I was there, and we always had good luck against Hail Mary. We did not have the same luck against Edina, by the way.
And yet you married an Edina girl.
I did. It's amazing. I don't know how anybody in Grand Rapids would let that happen, but I definitely outkicked my coverage.
You did for sure, and yeah. Mary's awesome. But that 78 tournament had your Grand Rapids team, which was unbelievable. It had Doug Woog coaching at South St. Paul, Terry Skrypek at Hail Mary, Willard Eichela at Edina East, who you would play in that championship game, Gene Sack, legendary coach at John Marshall. You had Neil Broughton. You had Aaron Broughton. You had Buntsy Erickson. It's one of the all-time classic Minnesota State tournaments.
It was fabulous. I'm not sure how Roseau didn't beat Edina, but Edina had a great team that year. And I remember we get to the finals. We're playing Edina. They're obviously, you know, if not probably the premier program and certainly in the state of Minnesota today, we get them and we played such a great game. We outshot them 2-1. Their goalie, Mike Aulick, stood on his head. I thought, this guy's all world. I mean, I don't know how we can ever put a puck past him. They beat us in double overtime. And you know, you have games in your career, Gorgie, where you just remember everything about it. And here we are, you know, almost 50 years later, in my case, I can still remember the winning goal. I can still remember the other ones I gave up. It's one that you want to have back and you want to do it all over again. But that's the great part about any sport. You don't get that chance.
And it's one of those, it's one of those tournaments, including the championship game, that I think the mystique around the state high school tournament, it went up another notch. Like, we have these iconic games, you know, later we had the Duluth East Apple Valley game, but at that time, you know, Edina East was such a power. You guys had developed into this unbelievably cool team that everybody wanted to win. Like, when you guys came into the Civic Center, I know you remember this, but I can't forget it as a kid. You know, the building would have maybe a quarter of it that was green and white. They were cheering for Edina East, and the rest of the building was cheering for you. And that's just the way it was.
I saw a great tweet the other day. Do you remember? You obviously remember the name Dave Spehar.
Oh, yeah.
He tweeted something out and he said, "State hockey tournament time is the greatest time of the year." He said, "It's the Metro team hate the Northern schools. The Northern schools hate the Metro teams. And everybody hates Edina." So,
and I got to be honest, I've never cheered for Edina, but this past weekend, being Lou Nanny's final of 60, I kind of felt like, you know what, Chanhassen, it's their first time there. They're going to have a bunch of runs of the tournament here in the very near future. This was pretty cool.
They're just a wonderful program from the youth all the way up through high school. They play a very consistent game. They've got a strategy from their youth level all through high school. It is the premier hockey program, youth and high school hockey program in the state of Minnesota. And I don't know that anybody's ever going to cheer a lot for them outside of Edina, but they just do it right. The kids stay in that program. They don't open enroll, which we discussed earlier. If truth were be told, they could probably field two excellent hockey teams because there are certain kids that don't make it and they'll go play at Blake or Breck or Benilde or St. Thomas Academy. And they just do it right. They got good numbers. They got good coaching and it's they're going to win a lot of games and it's sometimes hard to root for them, but it's a well done program.
You don't have to like them, but you probably have to respect them. You make a great point. There's no question. And this was one of those weekends where Louis's working the game. They're going to find a way to win, and they did. And so here you are, all this state tournament fun. You've developed into this goalie. And I got to ask you, before we get on to the University of Minnesota and Herb Brooks and how that transition went, your mask. And I think anybody that's listening that remembers knows what I'm talking about. If you're younger and you don't know, all you have to do is Google Jimmy Jetland, Grand Rapids, and that orange and black mask. I remember it like it was yesterday. Where did you come up with that?
You know, the funny thing is I kind of changed it every year. I don't know why I did. I would just mix it up and have it repainted. And I wish that I had kept every one of them, but it was generally the same mask that I would have repainted every year based upon what one of my buddies thought would be cool or what one of my teammates thought would be cool. And I look back at it now and the last one I did was fairly plain and I don't have any of the cool masks. I have the mask, but I don't have the paint jobs cause I'd paint over it. So, it was a little bit evolving in the NHL at the time, but even not so much then. It was, I don't know. There was a few goalies in the state that did it and I thought it was kind of cool. And maybe it was one of those things that set me apart.
It did. And I remember the orange and black one with the stuff around the eyes. It kind of looked like a wing almost coming back or almost flames coming back off the peripheral side of your eyes. It was cool. And I had a street hockey mask. I tried to copy it as best I could, but you end up at the University of Minnesota, Jimmy, and Herb Brooks, as we know now, this legendary coach that would go on to coach, the Miracle on Ice and many years at the National Hockey League level. How did that transition take place for you?
So one of the really interesting differences today versus back then is, you get kids that commit as sophomores, as juniors, well before their senior year now. It wasn't that way back then. I mean, you kind of got recruited right up through the state high school hockey tournament. And I mentioned to you earlier, I was a good baseball player. So I wanted to go to a school where I could play both D1 baseball and D1 hockey. And I had some opportunities on that, but I really wanted to play in the Big Ten and do that. So Herb Brooks offered me very late in my senior year. I don't know, it might have been April or something, offered me a full ride to Minnesota. Huh. And this is kind of a funny story. I had been on one other recruiting trip and I said, Herb, I am good. I really want to come to Minnesota, but I'd like to go on some of these other recruiting trips because they're kind of fun. And he said, you got 24 hours. I need to know in 24 hours. I think I committed on the spot. I don't think I took 24 seconds, not 24 hours. I just committed because that's where I ultimately wanted to go. But I thought I might as well go somewhere else and have some fun and enjoy one of these recruiting trips. So
he didn't see it that way.
He didn't think it was quite as funny that I wanted to do that as I did. I thought it would be an enjoyable time. So I think I responded in about 24 seconds. The other funny story about this is he comes to Grand Rapids and they had the paper come up to the house and get a picture with Coach Brooks and my parents and everything. And he just had my parents eating out of the palm of his hand. And afterwards, and this is true. I don't know. I think I can say this on a podcast, but he gets to the front of the steps. He's leaving. I've signed a letter of intent. He's leaving. And he said, "Now I just want you to know that's the nicest I'm ever going to be. From now on, I'm going to be a mean son of a bitch." And he leaves. And my mom's looking at me like, is there a way we could get that letter of intent back? But I wouldn't ever say he was a mean SOB. I would just say he commanded a lot of respect, and he demanded a lot from his players, and clearly the results demonstrated whatever he was doing, he was doing it right.
Well, and he was the same way, right, with you guys, that we probably see his personality come out in the movie Miracle, where he gives him that speech after the tryouts wrap up that, listen, those guys are the lucky ones. You guys are in it now for the long haul. I'm going to be your coach. I'm not going to be your friend. And that's the way he did it.
Yeah, that it is definitely the way he did it. And I occasionally get people that say to me today, you know, was he that hard on you? And I always say, I think the movie, he was nicer in the movie than he actually was in real life. And I'm not being disparaging at all. He just was, you know, he had high expectations, and he treated some players. He knew he could push their buttons differently. And he expected a lot out of his players. And that was that. It was just, he was not going to be your friend. He was going to be your coach. And I think a lot of guys respected that.
So you get there freshman year, you've got all kinds of star quality on that team, starting with yourself and Neil Broughton. What was camp like? You guys didn't know it at the time, but you were getting set for an unbelievable run that first year at the U, where you're going to end up winning the national championship. But when you get into school and start to figure out who your teammates are and some people you've competed against throughout your time at Grand Rapids, what was the feeling like? What was the experience like?
Yeah, I don't think I realized it at the time, but evidently before the start of that season, Herb Brooks came out and made a very bold proclamation that he thinks this team is good enough to win it all. And, you know, I'm from Northern Minnesota, and I certainly followed the Gophers, but I don't know that I understood the tradition of the program as well back then as I do now. And I we were always near the top of the league during the season, but you know, like any good hockey team, you have bad stretches and you have good stretches. And we didn't even win the league. North Dakota won the league in the last weekend of the year. They beat us in a game to win the league by a couple points. But it was clearly an incredibly talented team. I was a freshman. I did not play a lot. I backed up Steve Janizek, who ultimately ended up going on to be the backup on the 80 Olympic team, or to be on the 80 Olympic team. And I think that, Kevin, there were, I think it was eight players from that team that went on to the 80 Olympic team and won a gold medal. So clearly we had a lot of talent. I don't know that I knew that as a freshman. I just, you know, I'm in college for the first time, and we got a good team, and we're winning some games and we're losing some games. But I don't think you know, it's easy now to say, oh, you must have known. I don't think I knew how good we were and what a special team that was and what a special time that was. But it's easy to look back and recognize it now, but maybe it wasn't as much at the time.
And you end up playing that same North Dakota team in the championship game. That's the iconic belly flop goal by Neil Broughton, correct?
No question about it. It was one of the best goals. We've seen it over and over and over again over the years. But I remember a few things about the game. I remember, one, Steve Janizek stood on his head and made some great saves late in the game to allow us to win it. I think he was the MVP of the tournament. Neil Broughton with that. I'm not sure what the North Dakota goalie, his name was Bob Iwabuchi. And I don't know what he was doing, but he came rushing out like he was going to try to beat Neil to that puck. And at the last second, kind of threw himself down on his side, and Neil chipped it up over him and in. The other thing I remember about it, Gorgie, is we were in Detroit at the old Olympia.
Yes.
I don't know that there were 2,500 people there. There were guards in the bathrooms with machine guns. It was in a bad part of Detroit. And so, you know, you think national championship, full building, crazy atmosphere. It was anything but that, but that, you know, you're still winning a national championship. And I think at that time I thought, well, we'll do it again next year. We'll do it again after that. You don't realize how hard it is to do that.
And next year fascinates me, Jimmy. You mentioned it already, that you're going to have a bunch of your teammates on that 1980 Miracle on Ice team. Not only that, but your head coach that next season. I've never had this conversation with you. What was that dynamic like when almost half your team and some of your best players clearly are going off to play in the Olympics. And we didn't know at the time what was going to happen. It was going to become this crazy, unbelievable run and a game we'll all never forget. But at the time, you're just there, part of the Golden Gopher program, kind of left trying to figure things out. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so again, I think it's easier to reflect back on it now when you have time. But I do remember one wonderful story about that whole event. And the night they beat the Russians, if I remember correctly, the game started about 5 o'clock, 5:30 in Lake Placid. And it wasn't live on TV.
Correct.
And we had a game that night against Duluth at the old Mariucci, the old barn. And we were about to go on the ice for warmups. And I can remember the game, they beat the Russians, and all of us from the Gophers ran out in the hallway and were high-fiving and hugging all these Duluth players. Because, you know, they had two or three guys on the team. They had Mark Pavlich and Bob Harrington. And you know, we had all these guys. And we're out high-fiving. And then I think we probably went out on the ice and tried to beat the crap out of each other. But it was a really special moment to acknowledge that this was about the country. This wasn't about individual teams. This was about the success of the Olympic team, not about individual players from Duluth or from Minnesota. And it was really kind of a cool experience.
I do think people forget, we've talked about this on a prior podcast, that game was on late afternoon. I want to say, yeah, it probably coincided perfectly with that timing, because I think it was a 5 o'clock game on the East Coast, 4 o'clock game here, would have wrapped up around 6:30. So I was having, it was the week of my 13th birthday, and I was having a bunch of guys over for a pizza party to watch the game. And it was going to be on ABC that night at 8 o'clock. And when I try to explain this to like my daughters, I'm like, listen, there was no internet. Like nobody knew the score. Like my buddy showed up at the house. I had listened to the game on WCCO that afternoon, and I sat there having to hold my tongue the entire time while my buddies were gathering around to watch what was going to end up being the greatest sporting event of our lives. Like that was it. And I just vividly remember the disbelief. You know, my father was and still is the ultimate pessimist. And he's like, I don't know why you're wasting your time with that transistor radio when you know you're going to be able to watch it later. They're going to lose by 8 goals. And I'm like, jeez. But that was my dad. Like he was like, okay, they're not going to win this game. And then I kept yelling out my bedroom door, they're up, they're winning, they're going to win this game. And then you got to watch it. And I still, Jimmy, you know, all these years later, and I just was a fan, right? I still get chills when Al Michaels is counting that clock down and echoes those famous words, do you believe in miracles? I still, even echoing those words now, get chills.
I couldn't agree with you more. It was, you know, obviously it was a different time and it was a Cold War and it was college against professionals. I think what people don't always, you know, remember is the U.S. had a lot of really good players. I mean, they had tremendous players that went on to have great careers in the NHL. So in hindsight, it's, you know, maybe not as big a surprise, but at the time it was a bunch of college kids playing against the greatest team in the world. And, to have that outcome, I agree. It still gives me goosebumps. If I watch Miracle, it still gives me goosebumps. I watched it about a month ago with my grandkids, and I can't watch it enough.
Me too. I'm with you. Now, there's no easy segue, but I guess I'll put it this way. People ask me, because, you know, goalies are a little quirky, we're a little different, and, you know, what was the hardest part of the position? And I always said, you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself, and if I let in a bad goal or had a bad game, it did tend to stay with me. It's probably why I kind of got in my own way in terms of how far I went in the game, but there was a lot of pressure. And when you're a goalie, that's kind of why you migrate to that position. So my question to you, Jimmy, is more pressure playing in big games on that stage, whether it was Division I for the Gophers or the state tournament for the Halloween Machine, or being a goalie dad?
Oh, you know, without question, being the parent of a goaltender is more stressful than actually playing the position. I always felt like when we were playing, we had some control over the outcome, and we had some ability to to monitor our own emotions and our own feelings. And, you know, you had some way to impact the game. When you're a parent of a goalie, my wife says it best. She said, it's like watching your kid cross the freeway about five times a day in rush hour traffic. It's just, you never know what's around the corner. And it's a game. It's a silly way to act, and it's a silly way to be, because there's so many other bigger problems in life out there. But when you're the parent of a goalie, it's just, you take on what they're going through, especially Kevin, and you would know this because as a former goalie, you could see every bad thing coming around the corner. Yeah. I mean, you could just sit there and go, this isn't going to end well. And, you know, where if you weren't a goaltender, if you weren't a hockey player, you wouldn't have anticipated that bad outcome. But, you know, that's one of the jobs of a great goaltender, is to kind of anticipate things. Well, when you're sitting in the stands anticipating what's coming, it was way worse being a goalie parent than being a goalie.
So we know that Katie ended up being a star goalie and was remarkable at the position, but was there a conversation at some point where you or Mary or both of you tried to talk her out of it?
Yeah, great story. So she was in skiing. So she's, I don't know, 9 years old. She's in skiing. She said, Mom and Dad, I want to play hockey. And we were like, let's do skiing one more year. If you want to do it next year, we'll let you do it. But, you know, this is when the girls were really just starting to get started in hockey, and they didn't, you know, didn't start much before 9 or 10 years old. And sure enough, she came back the next year and said, I want to play hockey, and very quickly said, I want to be a goalie. And I thought, well, that's cool. I can help you, and this will be great. What a dumb decision that was.
Well, I have to tell the listeners the story, and I know you've heard it probably too many times and you're going to get annoyed, but this is factual, and this is how it played out. And so I'm coaching the St. Thomas women's team, and I'm out recruiting one of Katie's teammates, Lindsay Allen. She was a good defenseman, tall kid, great reach. I was very excited about having her in the penalty kill. And so I'm out doing my thing, and our program's kind of on the come. We're building, we're having some success for the first time. And I get to a Benilde game and I'm watching, and Lindsay's doing a great job, and we've had a good rapport. So I think there's a decent chance that she's going to end up playing at St. Thomas. And as I'm watching the game, I keep noticing the goalie, and I know the name right away. And I'm like, there's just no way she's not related to Jim Gentlin, you know, my guy. And so through her father, Bob, I have the chance to meet you, Jimmy, at one of the intermissions and have a conversation. At that point, everybody I'd talked to, and everybody I'd, from the coaching circles to people that knew the game, thought she'd end up playing Division I, which is fine. But I will tell you, and I think I've told you this 1,000 times, I ran to the lobby to make a quick phone call to call my parents to let them know that I had met Jimmy Gentlin. And my parents were dying, because if they had a nickel for every time I mentioned your name as a kid, they never would have had to work ever again. So it was a really cool night for me. Now, I didn't know at that time that we had any chance in hell at getting Katie to St. Thomas, but she did have D1 options, but she also liked the idea of having the education at St. Thomas and being a star player, which she ended up being. I just can't imagine what it was like for you as a parent to see your daughter become this rock star goalie when that's what you were just what, 20, 25 years before that. That had to be an unbelievable experience.
It was a fun journey, Kevin, and I've told you this 100 times, but I would tell you, when the journey was over, I was happy, because it was nerve wracking. It shouldn't have been. I should have just been able to sit and enjoy the games and not worry about it. Everybody says, boy, you're really going to miss this hockey. I never missed it. And I will say this about you as well. It was, I think, one of the reasons that she ultimately chose St. Thomas was because she felt connected to you. She felt connected to the team. She felt like she had an opportunity to play sooner. And, you know, that's what's great about, I think, you know, D3 hockey is it's very, very time consuming and very, very competitive, but it's not to the same level as D1. And that, you know, that's a cool thing for a lot of athletes.
It is. And it's funny, because I was working that game for Channel 45 over the weekend, just kind of doing some intermission work and getting my feet tiptoeing in the water. And anyway, I get a text from your daughter midway through the broadcast that she liked my sport coat or whatever, which was really funny. And I said, Katie, thanks for sending the note. And I said, by the way, I'm recording a podcast with your dad next week. And I'm beyond excited. And then she had the smiley face emoji and it was a fun time. We still connect here and there. I bumped into her over in Minnetonka at I think it was Brugger's. We were just over there hustling through getting a breakfast sandwich. And, you know, she's got the kids, she's got the schedule. She comes through and she's like, "Coach?" And I'm like, "Katie?" It was just really fun to kind of reconnect.
She broke away during the periods of the Grand Rapids game the other night to go out and connect up with four of her teammates from St. Thomas. It was Mel Drake and it was Mo Hardwick. And I don't remember. Tanea Wright.
Sure.
And it just brought back a lot of fun memories for her. And it's what's great about hockey in the state of Minnesota, Kevin. It's a cult. In a good way. I mean, and your friendships and your teammates last forever. And it's a special sport in the state of Minnesota. I know other states have great sports, but hockey in Minnesota is different and the tradition is different. And I can remember at Grand Rapids, you know, having people come up to me saying, "Hey, I've made my reservations for the state high school hockey tournament. Don't screw it up." And it's like, I got enough pressure where I'm worried about your vacation. But it's a wonderful time of the year, and it was a great weekend. And Edina was an excellent team, and Chan Hassan gave them their all. But it's this time of the year is great.
It is. And now we've come to the tail end of the conversation, Jimmy. We call it the hat trick hot seat. I've got three questions. They're not hard questions. There's no wrong answer, so don't freak out. But I know you can handle it. You're a man that brings a lot of poise to the table, whether you're having a conversation like this or on the golf course. You're much, much better at calming things down than others like me. I'll start with this one, Jim. Your very first concert you attended?
Kiss.
No
Duluth,
way.
At the deck in Duluth. Kiss. I think I was in ninth grade.
I'm shocked your parents let you go.
Fabulous.
Oh, were they not the best?
Oh, it was good. Gene Simmons and Stanley. Wasn't there a Stanley? Was it Paul Stanley?
Stanley? Yes.
Oh yeah. The best. Kiss. And then I saw them. I didn't go to the concert, but I saw they were at the state fair a few years ago and they looked a little older.
It's amazing how some of these bands are still going. I think I'll be attending a Journey concert here in the near future and they don't even have all the original members. Steve Perry's no longer the lead singer, but I saw them a couple years ago at Target Field, and even though they're in their 50s and 60s, they can still bring it. It's amazing to me that those bands can keep it going for as long as they have.
Kiss at Duluth. That was it for me.
Okay. Next question would be, I'm certain you've watched a lot of hockey games. This isn't you as a player, and it can be you as a dad, but the game that, of all the games you ever watched or attended, your very favorite game that you watched?
Oh, that I watched. Oh boy, there's a lot of. I'm going to go out on a limb here. One of my favorite hockey experiences was when I'll mix up the year here, but it was probably 2002 or 2003 when the Gophers won the national tournament at St. Paul Civic Center.
Yes.
At the XL, not the Civic Center, at the XL. And I think they beat Maine. I think they scored a goal late to tie it and then won in overtime.
Patolny in overtime, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that would be one that stood out for me because they hadn't won a national championship since our year, 79.
Wow.
And it had been, they had so many great teams in between. And that would be the one game that probably stands out the most for me that I was at and attended and almost jumped through the roof of the building. So
great pick. Final question. You're a golf guy. You play plenty of golf. If you could pick your dream foursome, so it has to be people that are still with us here on earth today, but if you were heading out to your favorite golf course, and it's warm enough already this week where you could do it and you could pick any three people to be a part of the foursome with you on the course, who are you bringing?
Yeah. Okay. I've never given this any thought at all. From the hockey world, I am bringing Bobby Orr. And the only reason I say that is one of my business partner here just had a chance to spend a weekend with him. And he said he was probably the nicest human being he's ever met. So I would go with Bobby Orr on a, entertainment front, I would go with, I would have Bruce Springsteen be a part of it, because I would love to hear his story.
Oh.
And lastly, Bruce Springsteen, Bobby Orr, and you. How about that? Because I'd want to watch you to see if you're still putting with your driver.
Anybody that knows me knows I went through a tough stretch there. I had the yips, and it, unfortunately, Jimmy got to see it up close and personal. It was just embarrassing. And if I'm out there with those two fine gentlemen, I'm probably not going to bring the driver out unless it gets real bad. Great picks. Great job on the hat trick hot seat. And Jimmy, I got to tell you, you know, I mentioned this when I bumped into you last week that I kind of put this podcast together thinking about Wooden Sticks and connecting with players, coaches, and managers that had, you know, moved on from the game, right? And so that kind of limits you to people from our generation, which is great. And you were on my short list, and I'm like, this, I knew it'd be good. I didn't know it'd be this good. And there are a couple stories that I didn't know. We've had a lot of conversations over the years, but I hadn't heard some of these stories. And it takes me back to just a great time in my life. And I will tell you that it's been just tremendous to be included and have that friendship with you, and the honor of coaching Katie. You know how I feel about her and your entire family, but to have you on this show, it means an awful lot. And thanks for taking the time.
Gorgie, you're the best. I always love my conversations with you. I look forward to having many more. The longer we talk, the bigger the stories will get.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Jim Jetland from the Halloween Machine. I'll be back after this short break as we close another curtain on Wooden Sticks. Jimmy, outstanding as always. Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's fun stuff, Gorgie.
Okay, we're back to close Wooden Sticks. This episode, as I expected, was so much fun. You can hear it in our conversation, just what a wonderful human being Jim Jetland is. Just love the game. And even though he was a complete rock star in high school and college, would never, ever talk about himself. And just the experience he brings to the table, like that time of the, you know, the era of hockey and how big it was. Like, we only had five channels. There was no cable. You know, this, the state tournament was on a different level. It's always going to be special. It's always going to be magical. That's never going to go away. The secret sauce, the bands, the kids, the weekend, that's always going to be there. But remember, in the 70s and 80s, that those network channels that covered the state tournament were one of maybe four or five options you had. So everybody watched, and you couldn't follow along on social media. There was no social media. So these games and these players were larger than life. And I was an 11-year-old kid sitting in that St. Paul Civic Center, just eyes as big as saucers, watching Jim Jetland and Jeff Pogel duel in that quarterfinal game. And I'm telling you that nearly 50 years later, I can remember the sights, the smells, the sounds. Grand Rapids had this band. They were the Indians back then. They had the headdress on, the cheerleaders, and we were sitting near the Grand Rapids section, and the bands were going back and forth, and the clear boards at the Civic Center. And yeah, the orange and black mask that Jim Jetland had that I quickly went home that weekend and painted my street hockey mask to match. These are priceless memories from my youth, and the fact that I was able to later in life connect with Jimmy, become friends, and coach his daughter. Just remarkable and a real blessing in my life. So again, thank you to Jim Jetland. Just loved our conversation today. And thank you for listening here on Wooden Sticks. One last reminder, Karen Cleary, ccleary@talknorth.com. We need you to be a part of the show. We'd love to help you out any way we can. Maybe you've got a friend that needs a little elevation in their business. We can take care of that as well. Thanks again one last time. This is Wooden Sticks. I'm Kevin Gord. We'll talk to you soon on our next show.